Local government meeting for February 23rd will come to order. This is Representative Mark Olson. Welcome to the committee today. We have two bills on the agenda. Representative Vanderveer, you're up first. Do we have a quorum? Quorum is present while Representative Vanderveer is coming up. Representative Poppy, have you had a chance to look at the minutes?
I certainly have, Mr. Chair, and I would like to move the minutes.
Representative Poppy moves that the minutes from February 21st, Local Government Committee, be approved. Any discussion? All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Thank you, Representative Poppy and members. Representative Vanderveer, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Did you bring anything for us to eat?
No.
Okay.
The bill.
Nay. Next on the agenda?
Nay.
That's funny, Mr. Chair.
Representative Vanderveer, welcome to the committee.
Oh, thank you. Mr. Chair, does someone want to move the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry about the distraction. Representative Vanderveer, I understand it needs to go to taxes.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Garofalo moves that House File 241 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. Do you also want to, is that your amendment in the?
Yes, Mr. Chair, it's an author's amendment.
To get it in the order?
Yeah, it just clarifies some language in the bill.
Okay. Representative Garofalo, would you like to move the amendment?
So moved.
Representative Garofalo moves the A2 amendment to the House File 241 to get it in the order of the bill, get the bill in the order that the author would like. Representative Lencheski.
Mr. Chair, I'm just curious as to, and I'm a co-author of this bill, so for full disclosure, I support this. Why is this going to taxes?
Representative Vanderveer, if you'd like to address that.
Mr. Chair, the in case that a local unit of government didn't comply with the bill, they lose all their state aid, which is LGA and those things. So.
Okay. Thank you.
And it's a good spot for
that's
it.
Plain
for
that's the handle.
Property tax, maybe in local government.
Okay.
To Representative Garofalo's amendment, any further discussion? All those in favor of the Garofalo motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Thank you. Representative Vanderveer, to the bill.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill members came to me from actually a retired Minneapolis police officer who described the situation where they were allowed at one time to wear flag patches and then not, depending on the political environment in the city. And so we started taking a look at it and realized that other municipalities had a problem. And if you look in your packet, there's a letter from former Representative Dale Walz kind of describing that changing landscape, even up in the city that they live in Baxter. And you'll see letters of support from St. Paul Police Federation and the Police Officers Federation of Minneapolis. The bill is simple. It's meant to say that public employees have the right to wear a flag on their and display the flag, and that can't be prohibited up to a certain size, 3x5. There is a safety element in there on the pins if where the jurisdiction could restrict wearing them if provided they restricted all other pins from being worn. So if there was a safety issue with the pins, which that section's meant to address that. So I think otherwise the bill's pretty straightforward. And if you have any questions, I stand for it.
Questions to the bill? Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Vanderveer, for bringing this forward. I just wanted to follow up. You mentioned that, you know, when I saw this, my thought was, why would this be prohibited? And you mentioned it had to do with politics or a political environment. there's no other safety or other reasons. This has primarily been a question of the vagaries of local politics in certain communities. Is that do I understand you correctly with that?
Representative Vandiver.
Well, sorry to Mr. Chair, but Representative Hornstein, if you read the letters from Dave Titus, and he couldn't be here today, he's out of town, but there was a number of times when they were told that they couldn't wear them, and then they could, and at that juncture, you know, we just decided that maybe we'd help out with that policy because it is a problem in St. Paul as far as they're concerned, and police officers in Minneapolis agree. So those two cities, but I mean, it's pretty specific in these cases, but it does depend on the political environment at the time, and I think is the main reason. But I do believe that public employees should have the ability to display their patriotism and not be prevented to do that from doing that by politicians. Well, and that's what the bill is intended to address.
Representative Hornstein.
Chair, I guess there was one instance, I think, in Minneapolis where there was some concern about officers being confused with security guards, and security guards wear the flags, and the people wanted to have some differentiation. Are you aware of that issue at all, or has that come up in your discussions with people?
Representative Vandiver.
Mr. Chair, it hasn't. I think somebody brought up something similar in another committee, and apparently there's some rules with regard to security officers that have changed that address that, is what I thought Officer Titus had testified to, the St. Paul Police Federation president. The way he has explained it, that concern wasn't there anymore. Now, that's just what I'm recalling. I'm not certain if that's a fact, but I don't think wearing a flag on a police officer is confusing. So, either way.
Horsing.
Thank you, Representative. I mean, apparently there's not a lot of opposition.
I don't see, no.
Police chiefs or management of these. So, I mean, it sounds like it's not really an issue. So,
Mr. Chair, Representative Horsing, nobody specifically brought that concern to me. There have been some other concerns, local control and those kind of issues, but not that one specifically.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Vandiver, I support the intent of this bill, but I have some concerns about the language relative to the sanctions. This is potentially a huge sanction to impose, and when the language says the commissioner must suspend, and when we don't have a definition of employer, I worry a little bit about how this might be carried out. It's conceivable that you might have an overzealous supervisor, somebody who uses poor judgment, orders an employee not to wear it or to take it off, and for the whole municipality or county to suffer a huge loss in state aid because of that overzealous employee, I don't think is quite right. It seems to me your language is going overboard here, Representative Vandiver.
Representative Vandiver.
Mr. Chair, I think it's pretty reasonable. It says that the commissioner would suspend the disbursement until they determine that the municipality is in compliance, so it's, I mean, from that one point to the next wouldn't have to be very long, but it is intended that the way the bill reads, it probably would be best that they complied with the legislation, but wouldn't want to make them do it.
Representative Lanning.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it doesn't, I mean, my suspension could be indefinite. mean, I support your bill, and I think we ought to have a clear and direct policy that this is not, local units of government shouldn't be allowed to do this, but I think your language here is going a little bit far.
Representative Vandiver?
I think it's reasonable. I think it's controllable. I think that it's predictable. I think that if they comply with the legislation, they won't have a problem. If they make a mistake, that it would be suspended until they correct it, which could be immediate as far as I'm concerned. And that is my legislative intent. So with that, if that helps, but I think it's pretty straightforward.
Further discussion? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Vandiver, in talking to or obtaining these signatures from individuals who are concerned about this wearing of a patch, did you also have any conversations with any of the city officials or the local officials regarding the legislation, as Mr. Lanning is referring to here, as far as a negative response to what's been said?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, other than just briefly with someone from the League of Cities regarding safety issues, which I pointed out were in the bill and seemed to satisfy them, but they are here, I haven't. I did receive a couple letters from, I think one from the Blaine police chief, who was concerned about the uniform aspect of the bill, but he did state that the city of Blaine was opposed to the bill, but I talked to a council member who said that they hadn't taken a position and that it probably would, if they did take one, not be in opposition. So I think, as far as I can recall, and there was some email from outstate from another individual, though I'm not sure they were a police chief, that addressing it. But other than that, I haven't had any opposition.
Thank you.
Further discussion. Representative Lancheski.
Thank you, Chairman Olson. You're trying to gauge kind of support, and I can tell you, I've just learned from DFL research here and passed on to former Mayor of Bloomington, Neil Peterson, the DFL research cheat sheet, that Bloomington, in fact, has a policy that they prohibit these. And I think I certainly can't speak for Representative Peterson, but I think if there was a problem with this bill, they'd be here. They're not. Bloomington dogs issues around here pretty carefully, as does Minneapolis and St. Paul, and I understand that they have that as well, but they're not here either. And both the Minneapolis and St. Paul Police Department support the proposal. So I really think, just in general, when people have a problem with some of this legislation, they're here. So, you know, my feeling, trying to gauge what the cities think, they're okay with this, or they be here. And I really think, from sort of a freedom of speech perspective, I don't know why we wouldn't allow this bill to go forward.
Yeah. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would agree. It sounds like a reasonable bill, but I also see Representative Lanning's point, and I just have a question. Representative, is there an opportunity for a warning for a city or for a local government to know that they're in violation, or a chance for a hearing as the process moves forward to kind of give them the opportunity to be able to know that they're in violation?
Representative Vandiver.
Mr. Chair, Representative Poppy,
mm-hmm.
I hadn't considered that. It appears to me that they would, because we're saying we're suspending, we didn't use the word forfeit, that it would be necessary to, you know, it would kind of make it more complicated, could add expense, and then we'd get into the controversy of how, you know, we're going to determine that we have them go to court or whatever, and this seemed much simpler and more straightforward. I think if we went to the route where we had to, you know, a hearing or something, or court hearing that proved they were guilty, then we'd have to put in a fine like $1 million or something, and we didn't want to go there either, so we just is not this was a good route at all. But you know, I'm open to suggestions. It is going to taxes, and if there, you know, if there's something that would be as maybe that might work better, we could talk about it.
Excuse me, Representative Scalzi. Representative Howell is next.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kind of to Representative Lanning and Poppy's point, is there a process in place for these cities to appeal, and who do they appeal to? Have that been thought out?
Representative Vandiver.
Mr. Chair, Representative Howell, no, because, again, it's a suspension of state aid, and there is a process to appealing the law itself, but that would be going, you know, through the court process. But what would we be appealing in this case, I guess? Maybe I don't understand your question.
Representative Powell.
Mr. Chair, maybe there's, I mean, if there was a case that needs to be investigated, mm-hmm. I guess my question is, who's in charge of that, and is there a process in place? And if there is, what would the cost be to the state? You know, in the cities and the counties who are in fraction of this bill.
Representative Vandiver.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Tao, I don't know that there would be a cost directly with regard to the bill, but if there is, then that would probably move it towards a fine or something like that. I think it's simply if the Department of Revenue, I don't think that there's going to be a lot of municipalities not being in compliance, but if that were to happen, again, their aid is just suspended, so until they are in compliance, so I would assume that if the Commissioner of Revenue determines that they, or Commissioner of Finance, that they are, then they are. And if they determine they're not, and the appeal obviously would be court. I mean, if they said, well, we deny it or whatever, and, you know, they can always go to court with that and say that the Commissioner made it up and it's not true, and we never had a policy like that. So, I mean, I don't see why that wouldn't work, I guess. And again, if we were, you know, doing something horrible to them, then immediately I could see the concern, but basically it's if you're not in compliance, just get in compliance and don't worry about it.
Representative Scalzi.
So as this bill goes through the, I don't know if this is on, but as this bill goes through, I don't know where you're headed next, but in along with what Representative Poppy had asked, for a city that's getting a lot of state aid, maybe a suspension of state aid until it was determined if they really were in violation, or maybe if they had a chance to correct the situation. And I'm in favor of the bill, but I guess, I mean, none of my cities get state aid, but if I were a city that gets state aid, and there's lots of them in the state, that could disrupt their activities. Would you have a chance in your next travel with this bill maybe to address that so that these cities wouldn't be withheld aid at a time when they're supposed to be paying bills with the money that they're getting, and maybe be given a warning and so much time to correct the situation?
Representative Vandiver.
Mr. Chair, Representative, what I would say, one, I think that once the bill is passed, they're pretty good at knowing what the laws are, and they may want to take care to make sure that they're complying with the laws, all of us have to do. But if as we go forward there was something, and I guess I think that this works, but if you came up with something better, then I would certainly be open to looking at it. I understand kind of your concerns, but once they're notified either by an employee or someone that, you know, I've been told I can't wear this, I think if they fixed it right then and there and said, yes, you can, and corrected the problem, I doubt if, you know, anything would happen at all. So, you know, the way I read this, so I guess I don't see the onerousness there, but unless you decided you weren't going to comply, then you might have a problem if you get a lot of state aid. But if you made that decision and you're not getting our money, then that's fine with me. So we can, you know, talk about it some more, but I do kind of think it works the way it is right now, but I'm open to suggestions.
Representative Sharon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was uncomfortable, as Representative Lanning was, until you made it more clear to me that the word is suspension, not forfeit. So I'm more comfortable with suspension. I think it's pretty straightforward. Either you comply or you don't, and it's easily correctable. So I would be in favor of the bill as it currently is.
Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To piggyback on Representative Strong, this isn't rocket science. I mean, it's pretty cut and dry. If you prohibit other pins, you can prohibit the flags for health and safety reasons. You got to thought. I mean, this is pretty basic, and to try and put in some elaborate appeal process and go to court, you know, people are smart. They can figure this bill out. It's just going to require that people are allowed to wear flags under these circumstances, and I don't think it's a big deal.
Representative Peterson.
I looked at this and I'm thinking, it says a patch depicting the flag. Now what if you had 20 employers, all who decided they would depict the flag in a different way? And one of those depictions was a mockery or was totally inappropriate. You know, is there some way that the jurisdiction who would be penalized could get some agreement on this point of what would be an appropriate depiction? See what I mean? If you had somebody who really was going to be one to mock the system could come with their own depiction, and then the employer would be hard-pressed to say that that is not appropriate?
Brooks and Vandiver.
Mr. Chair, that's a good question. I'm wondering if depict or does emblem cover that? What we didn't want to do, though, is get into, you know, prescribing all these rules, and we went on the assumption that the public employees would wear the flag respectfully. Your question says, what do we do if they're not wearing it respectfully? And I think it raises a good point. I'm not sure how we would prescribe that in the bill.
Representative Peterson, did you have any...
Well, again, Mr. Chairman, I think I'm seeing this as part of a uniform question. It's you know, in Bloomington, it was a question of uniform and power and control of the chief and his and the officers as to what was appropriate or not. And I think this flies in the face of that. Is again, if an officer wanted to protest, even his chief, he wanted to be in the chief's face without some kind of it being appropriate, and all of the officers are doing the same thing, it could really start a real issue within the force. And I, heaven forbid that would happen, but you just know at some point it will.
Representative Peterson, I'm not offering this, but some words come to mind on the end of line 8. I'm just going to throw it out there for discussion just to help move things along, because you're raising a good point. After the word from, insert showing patriotism by. Forbid its employees from showing patriotism by wearing a patch or a pin depicting the flag of the United States of America. I think we should think about this for a while, but I just throw that out there. Representative Vandiver?
Mr. Chair, it's out there. I'm not sure that addresses his concern. On the other hand, with regard to police, I guess I'm not concerned that they're going to do something like that. I think it it covers all public employees, so there may be, well, I don't think a fireman would do it either. The ones I know, but certainly I suppose it could be a problem, and maybe it's one we could address if it actually occurs. I've got a lot of faith in the public employees across the state. I'm not real concerned about it, but if the committee is, it's something to think about. I mean, it would be sad if somebody abused the situation and, or, you know, decided to do something like that. But yeah, I kind of doubt it'd be police or fire. It may be other public employees, but even then, it isn't my experience that's occurred in Minnesota. I just think they won't do that.
To this point, Representative Lanning, to this point.
Mr. Chairman, to your point, I think you make a good point. One of the possibilities that occurs to me is that someone could choose to wear an American flag patch upside down as a form of protest. And the way the bill is currently drafted, that does not apply to it. And so I think your language would address that kind of potentiality that someone might do.
Representative Vandeveer and members, and Representative Lanning, I appreciate your comments. I wasn't offering that amendment. I was looking for this kind of discussion. But as you were, right before you said that, Representative Lanning, I thought about the person who might do what you just suggested and how they would argue that that's their way of showing patriotism. And this is a very complex issue. And yet, if we allow this, because Representative Peterson has raised a very important point, if we allow this, it could really cause some grave division within the ranks of whatever organization we're talking about here, whether it be firemen or policemen. And it could really cause some grave division. And another idea that's been handed to me, and I'll just throw it out there, I'm not offering this as an amendment. I'd prefer members to do this rather than from this position. Another suggestion that has been offered to me here is to, on line 9, replace the word depicting with to wear a patch or a pin of the flag of the United States of America, something simple like that.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, what was the second? Could you redo your first one? And was that line 8 adding from displaying their patriotism?
On line 8, the first suggestion was, after the word from, insert showing patriotism by, and then it goes on, wearing a patch or a pin depicting the flag. Now, there's also flag etiquette out there that's pretty standard, and we may be able to reference that. I don't know if council can inform us as to whether or not that flag etiquette is written in any form in law or rule somewhere. Representative Anderson has carried some legislation on this. He might have some comments. But I think Representative Peterson has raised a good point, concurred to by Representative Lanning and others, and I welcome the discussion. And Representative Cornish, I don't want to bypass you, but to this point, we'll stay on this point and kind of sidestep here with our list that's getting longer. Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I just looking at it, in item number 1, the employer may limit the size, and it must, what we may just do there is the employer may limit the size and the appropriateness of the patch. And then they'd have to come to an agreement. And that would then allow the chief or whoever that quote employer is to agree to the size and the appropriateness. Then you don't have a war protest or something happening. Then there would be conformity.
Representative Vandeveer?
Mr. Chair, that kind of occurred, and the size turned out to be 3/4 inch. So I don't know that that's a good idea, but keep thinking.
Representative Peterson, is it possible that the employer
could also be one who protests?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's the employer that has caused this to occur. I mean, the employers have objected.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that power control thing of a uniform is something that commanding officers in a hierarchy like Bloomington likes to preserve.
Representative Peterson and members, there could even be a case where an employer may want to wear a flag upside down because we passed this bill. Representative Throne.
I'm wondering, patriotism and even appropriateness can be interpreted pretty broadly. And maybe the word I'm thinking of can be broadly depicted too, but maybe not quite as broadly. But I was thinking that on line 9, wearing a patch or pin, respectfully depicting the flag.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Van Veer.
In its upright position.
Well, respectful, I think, respectfully might, I think that might cover that. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
All right.
Representative Strong, thank you. Representative Cornish, you've been very patient. Thank you.
We used to go around and around about this. I was the president of our police union for 3 terms, and the uniform was a big item. I support the bill, and I prefer keeping it clean. The one idea I did occur to me was the etiquette, something referenced to the way the flags are properly displayed. But I'd love to keep appropriateness or anything that would take, interpretation to find out what that is. So if we could just stick to wearing the flag or the patch or the pin, and then something referenced about etiquette, just so it would be properly displayed. But whenever you put any appropriateness in there, it's going to leave the wide latitude for the employer to interpret in a different way. And I was actually thinking of amendment to put civil sanctions on an employer that wouldn't allow this, and to have them hang a black veil over their Star of Minnesota sign if they had one out in their city. So I was thinking a little more hard on the employer and on the city than this. I don't know why you wouldn't allow your employees to wear the flag. If you ever gone to a cop's funeral or a big gathering for cops, you'll see just about every uniform, it seems like, has a flag somewhere on it. And there is really no health or safety reason not to have a cloth patch on there of some size. But if we could just stay away from vaguely interpreted things in this bill about appropriateness, I'd appreciate it.
Representative Wardlow, do you want to make your suggestion here? I think it's a good one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not a lawyer. I have yet to cross over to that dark side, but my son's a lawyer, so I can say that. What about something referring to, in the language someplace, referring to what's customary and standard flag etiquette? But that might beg the question, what's customary and standard? But someplace, the military, I know, has rules and regulations on the flag. And maybe we could refer to their rules and regulations. I don't know.
Members, on line 9, and Representative Wardlow, I'd like you to look at this. I like the language you have here. Customary and standard flag etiquette. Line 9 after the word pin. Forbid its employees from wearing a patch or pin according to customary and standard flag etiquette. A pin of the flag of the United States of America after the word America according to customary and standard flag etiquette. Is that a better place to put it?
Say it again.
Representative Wardlow, I'll leave it up to you or other members. I'm going to pass this back. I'm just trying to move the discussion along.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Wardlow.
It could say from wearing a patch or pin depicting the flag according to customary and standard flag etiquette. Or you could insert that depicting the flag of the United States of America according to customary and standard flag etiquette, except as follows.
Yeah, pin or flag. The English teacher says that works, the last one.
Representative Schroen, are you the English teacher?
Yeah, the English teacher says it works best after the comma, after the United States of America, then the words.
I realized that after I stated it, too.
I caught that, too. That's why I said it last.
Okay, we haven't got a motion yet, but any further discussion on that idea?
So moved.
Can I move my own words?
Before we go,
you move it. Representative Powell.
On that point, before we go, Mr. Chair, what's the standard for a pin? I mean, we talked about the flag, but I don't know if the military uses pins. I mean, what's the standard for using a pin? I'm kind of confused.
Representative Vandiver.
Mr. Chair, I didn't hear what Mr. Tao said, but this goes back to our other concern, something we might do, but could you repeat?
Representative Tao.
Thank you. I was concerned, we were talking about the standard to the amendment there of wearing the patch. I just want to know what's the standard to wearing a pin. Is there a standard out there, or?
Representative Vandiver.
Not that I know of, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wardlaw.
Mr. Chair, Marines don't wear pins too much. I've never seen a pin on a military uniform of a flag. I've seen it of patches, but if the Army or somebody wears pins with flags on them, then there's a precedence. But I can't tell you. But I'd like to move this thing that...
Representative Wardlow moves to amend House File 241. Representative Wardlow, would you restate your amendment, please? So everybody has it.
Chair and members. I move a verbal amendment that would insert the words, and I'll read as follows. I'll start on line 9, but it gets inserted on line 10 after the word America. Insert according to customary and standard flag etiquette, and so it would say on line 9, wearing a patch or pin depicting the flag of the United States of America according to customary and standard flag etiquette, comma, except as follows.
Representative Wardlaw, you had previously mentioned the word respectfully before depicting. Do you also want to include that?
I did.
Well, someone did.
Customary and standing.
Really?
Respectfully. I think Representative Strong has another amendment to my amendment.
I think you can just incorporate it into yours. Respectfully depicting.
Representative Wardlaw?
I'll incorporate that.
Okay.
Thank you.
So the amendment would read on line... Representative Wardlaw moves to amend House File 241 by adding the word on line 9 after the word pin, insert respectfully, and on line 10 after America...
Where is that?
Let's find out.
According to customary and standard flag etiquette. Is that correct, Representative Wardlaw?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Discussion to that amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Senator.
I think any standard we put in here should be one that everyone can explain. Now, is it clear that what this means? And that, I think that's the question we'd have to ask ourselves. What is not customary flag etiquette? If it's a clear objective thing, then I would support it, but.
Representative Scalzi.
I just was trying to give a little guidance here. I know from my years on the city council, there's a little pamphlet, and I thought I had it with me, but I don't. But every city has one, because you have to know how to display and use the flag respectfully. Mm-hmm. And there's a little pamphlet. I just wish I knew who printed that pamphlet, but it's in common usage.
Yes.
Representative, Mr. Chair, we could maybe put that in as a placeholder. It's just going to, I think, taxes, and I'm on that committee, and we could work on it. That's one thought. I don't know how much time the committee wanted to spend on this. There is a...
Mr. Chair.
Excuse me. Representative Sanderson.
Thank you. To that point, the Secretary of State's Department, as Representative Scully was talking, they do have a pamphlet that is on flag etiquette. Mm-hmm. And that is something that we can get, or at least I know that last year I was able to obtain some of those and basically bring those around when I'm out in the community. And so there is a pamphlet on flag etiquette that could be either referenced or utilized as a backdrop for this.
So far I have indication, I'm just going to state this for the record, so far I have indication that there's no objections to this amendment. We're kind of discovering this concern here. And I'm going forward on that basis and trusting that it's fine because it seems like it's non-controversial anyway. But Representative Wardlow has moved an amendment. And if I understand correctly, Representative Vandeveer and members of the committee, if you're okay with going forward with this as a placeholder, I think there needs to be some research done to assure that there's some consistency with what we would call customary and standard. Because council has given me a copy of some federal information on it. But if that can be looked at, and we could maybe clarify some things in the future, we'll go forward with this if there's no objection. With that, to this point, Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Several years ago, 2003, when we passed the language for the Pledge of Allegiance, there was language that was put in place at that point in the following year to use the flag etiquette that was brought forward by the Secretary of State's office and on the federal level, to use that booklet as a means to educate young people at the discretion of the student, or I mean of the teacher or the school district, but it was to be implemented into the curriculum at some point. And those were the standards that were used, and it's already in print that we use it either the Secretary of State's office here in the Minnesota State or on the federal level to use that booklet, and that's all the etiquette. And that's been copied after military guidelines as the way the flag is displayed for military performances, too. So it's already there. It just needs to be brought up and maybe referenced as far as the statute, and we can just reference the statute in your bill on your next go. I don't know the reference right now, but it can be just referenced and utilized within your next, as you go to the next committee.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. To the amendment, any further discussion? All those in favor of the Wardlow amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Thank you. To the bill as amended. Further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can I just ask Representative Vandeveer, this is particularly for law enforcement. You're talking about fire or public safety personnel. You're talking all, in the bill, you're talking about all public employees. I guess one of the things I'm thinking about is a summer part-time park and rec person who, you know, maybe wants to display the flag in some, and it kind of goes back to what Representative Peterson was talking about, in some way or manner that's not necessarily appropriate. And that's why I guess I was kind of coming at with the needing a warning at some point, because if somebody comes to work and they're not dressed in a manner that's appropriate and then told to go home, and they go to the newspaper and it kind of blows up, and all of a sudden the city gets a suspension of their amount. I guess I'm just trying to figure through how in practicality it really is going to work. And I appreciate the fact that you're bringing this forward, and I think the intent I do understand is to allow people to be able to display the flag appropriately. But I just have a question about, I guess, maybe the public employee part of it and that side. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, Representative Poppy, you are right. I brought it forward primarily for police, and in the course of those conversations and as we discussed it and had it written, and I talked to a number of people about it, the question came up as to why should it just be police and fire, and shouldn't all public employees be able to do that? And I think that, or public safety officers, but it was another thought, but I guess I'm a little hesitant not to give public employees that right or acknowledge that right, I guess would be more appropriate, because I think they might be disrespectful to the flag. I mean, I have a hard time thinking that way, but I mean, it's possible.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill would be a lot easier to vote for if we deleted Section C, the tying of the money. I think that people would be much more willing to vote in favor of doing this if you just said that you can't forbid it. I think that local units of government come before us all of the time for lots of different things, and we don't hold these huge hammers over their heads. So I would make a motion to delete from line 22 on deleting the section about suspending disbursement.
Representative Hillstrom moves on page one, lines 22 to 25, be deleted, and page 2, line 1, be deleted. Representative Vandeveer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, I know that you just came in, but we did have some extensive discussion about the fact that it is, I think the word that we use is suspended, not forfeited, on that aid, and if you still want to delete it, I mean, that's certainly your option, but I would oppose that amendment, and I would hope that there'd be a roll call.
Further discussion to the amendment? Representative Cornish.
I'd like a roll call vote.
Roll call being requested, there'll be a roll call vote. Further discussion to the amendment?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Lanning.
Representative Vandeveer, the way I read this Section C, all school districts would be covered, all counties would be covered, but not all cities would be. There are in fact some cities that don't get local government aid. I would take it the language here doesn't cover market value credit, because that's not direct, that's property tax relief to the property taxpayer. Could you help me with that? Are there in fact cities that would not come under this section?
Representative Vandeveer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning, I don't intend that if that's the case. I question if no, there's a locality that doesn't receive any state money. Is that, I mean,
I believe that's
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe that's the case, that given the language here, I think some cities would be excluded from this, and you know, I think we all believe in equal protection under the law, and if that is in fact the case, then I think that's one problem with this section. And I was able to come up with some language that at least initially to me fixes one of the other problems I had with this section, where it's just not simply a situation where one supervisor gets carried away and does something that jeopardizes the appropriation or funding for the whole local unit of government or employer. If we just simply said on line 24, stop at, delete everything after the word who, and just simply said refuses to comply with this provision. I think what you're trying to get at here is anybody who's willfully refusing as an employer to comply, that would take care of one of my other problems with this.
Representative Enver.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning, you're proposing on line 24, did you say?
Representative Lang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, on line 24, delete the existing language after the word who through the rest of the section and replace it with, it would read, or aid to any public employer who refuses to comply with this provision.
Representative Vanderbeer.
I'm confused. I guess after aid where it says to?
Who?
Oh,
who.
After who. And what are you doing?
Representative Lang.
It would read, that the section would read, the Commissioner of Finance or the Commissioner of Revenue must suspend disbursement of any state appropriation or aid to any public employer who refuses to comply with this provision.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lanning and Representative Vanderbeer, the motion before us is to delete this section, and I understand the Representative Lanning, I actually see the point of identifying your concerns with this provision, but unless there's a motion to amend the motion or we dispense with this motion and then come back to yours, but I do understand your point. I'm not trying to defer your point. It's just that I don't feel we can spend too much time on it because we do need to stay focused on the initial motion and respect that motion. But your point is valid with respect to that motion in that it addresses this section and you're identifying your concerns with it and raising some other options to consider as we vote on this motion. But we can't belabor the point too long. Representative Lencheski. Unless Representative Lanny, did you have anything to finish up on it? Okay. Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that as the person who asked if it, why is this going to taxes, now I think that this is all going to get resolved in taxes, actually. And the chair of the division is the author of this bill who will have to sort that out. And I think Representative Lanning is on that division as well as I am. But I would... You've drawn my attention to it. You've made some good points, Representative Lanning. And what I would say is that there are, though, state appropriation or aids would also apply to the gas tax receipts, I suppose. So every city's getting that. So maybe we've got everybody hooked in here when you think about the MSA dollars. And Representative Holberg's nodding her head, and she's the transportation chair. So I guess I see where you're going with LGA, but maybe if this is drafted to mean everything, I'm not clear how the author had intended state aid meant in this component.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lencheski, because we are starting to get a little bit beyond our jurisdiction here. It's up to the members whether or not we keep this in here. I'll leave it to the author of the bill. If we take this out, it technically doesn't need to go to taxes. So Representative Lanning's points are quite valid.
Yep.
To this amendment, to this motion, because we need to determine our basis for whether or not we keep this in or take it out, and it will have to go to taxes if we leave it in, and it won't have to if we take it out.
Mr. Chair.
To your motion, Representative Hillstrom.
Mr. Chair, given the fact that it is going to taxes and they are going to debate this issue, I'm certain, thoroughly, and you are on the committee, I'll withdraw my motion so there is not a need for a roll call vote, but I am very concerned about this piece, and I hope that you seriously look at it as it moves through the process.
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Vanderbilt, I'd be happy to work with you as this comes to taxes and see if we can find some language that satisfies the concerns that have been raised.
Representative Vanderbilt.
No. Okay. How could I argue with that?
Further discussion to the bill as amended. Any further testimony for or against the bill? Seeing none, Representative Garofalo renews his motion that House File 241 be recommended to pass as amended and be re-referred to taxes. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The bill is passed to taxes.
Thank you.
Thank you, members.
Mr. Chair, for your help.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you for the cookies, Representative Manager.
Okay.
Representative Samuelson, House File 656.
Yeah, we got a prayer.
Representative Samuelson, does your bill go to the General Register from here?
That would be my understanding, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Samuelson moves her bill. House File 656 be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register. Members, if we could have quiet in the room, please.
Yes, that's correct. Okay, I would like to offer an author's amendment, and that's Amendment A1. And basically what the amendment does, it just reorganizes the bill and looks at the way laws have been passed and organizes them, laws that have been on the books in scattered places in the statutes, and what it's basically doing is pulling all these together. The amendment itself just lists all the laws, all the special laws that are going to be included into one section.
Representative Samuelson moves the A1 amendment to House File 656 to get the bill in order which she would like it.
Mm-hmm.
Discussion. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, I think you meant it passed, right? You said failed. You didn't have passed, right?
Did I say failed?
Yes.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. I did mean
passed. Thank you, Representative Garofalo.
I think you said prevailed.
I'm having a day of inverting things. I do tend to do that. See, thank you for keeping watch.
Cool.
Thank you. Representative Samuelson.
May I proceed, Mr. Chair?
You may proceed. I won't invert that. You can proceed.
As this committee well knows, many local units of government seek special legislation to clarify or modify their general authority in the delivery of services or administrations in their counties. Anoka County has 77 special laws in effect from 1955 and others no longer relevant in conflict or suspended by new general law that go back to 1858. Anoka County's special laws are not codified into the Minnesota statutes and are found only in session laws of the year and act which they were passed. Because of this, they can be missed when legal research is conducted. This bill will organize Anoka County's relevant special laws into one chapter in Minnesota statutes and repeals those no longer relevant or suspended by other laws. These special laws will then be grouped in the same chapter for easy and accurate reference. Other larger counties like Dakota, Hennepin, Ramsey, and St. Louis do have their laws codified into stature in the same way. And that, in essence, is what we're asking to do. I have Kristen Larson here with me, who is the Assistant County Attorney for Anoka County, and she is here to answer questions, if I can't answer them, if you have any. So basically, that is it. The bill, the only other change that the bill makes is that it actually converts the word village into city. That's the bill. Are there any questions?
Thank you, Representative Samuelson. Questions, Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Chair Lanny. Representative Samuelson, what is the cost of this, the reviser of statutes, and who pays for that to perform this work?
Representative Samuelson, do you, or Ms. Larson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will turn it over to Ms. Larson.
For the record, I'm Kristen Larson. I'm an assistant Anoka County attorney. And, Mr. Chair, I'm not aware of any cost associated with it. These are all laws that are currently on the books in the special laws. We're not making any new law here. So I'm not aware. There may be some incidental administrative costs since the reviser of statutes will need to do some work doing what the bill tells the reviser to do and placing these laws into the statutes, but I'm not aware of what that would be specifically.
Representative Marquardt.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my point is every county
could approach the state to do this. And you're asking the state to perform something specific, and I don't know what the cost may be. It might not be much to draw things and so forth, but I'm just wondering if, in fact, every county may want to have a section that they can easily reference, because over time, if you have attorneys working for the county, now it's actually going to save you some dollars to pay attorneys to spend a little less time going through statute books. And I'm just, I mean, this is a benefit for Anoka County, and every county may want to get in on this, because now an attorney can look at something, boy, this refers to Clay County or Wilkin County, and save some time. So I'm just, in the past with these other counties, has the state just assumed these costs, or because it's going to be extra work for the reviser? It might be a slight amount, but...
Ms. Bison, do you wish to comment on that? Maybe you could also indicate whether this has happened with other counties, too.
Mr. Chair and Representative Marquardt, this is editorial work for the statute books that the reviser's office has done for other counties. I do not know what it costs in terms of time or, you know, how the other four counties that have their special laws codified, how that was done in the past. It's something we can ask the reviser's office for you if you would like more detail on how they approached it. But the laws, as Ms. Larson said, the laws exist, and it's a matter of editorial time and including them in the statute books as opposed to in various one page here and there throughout the years in the session laws. So, but in terms of the cost, I wouldn't know how to answer that, and that would be a question for the reviser's office.
Representative Markley?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Bison, do you know, would this prohibit any other county from asking for the same?
Ms. Bison?
Mr. Chair and Representative Marquardt, no. Anybody can come to their member and request legislation.
Representative Marquardt?
Last, thank you, Mr. Chair. Last comment. I mean, I think this is going to be a benefit to the specific county in asking the. I mean, I think there should be some cost, but I don't see why every county may not want to do this to just make it simpler when they look at any state law that affects their county or city or school district or 1,790 townships. This could be, I mean, ultimately it could be a bigger thing, but that's. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Samuelson or Ms. Larson, did you wish to respond to that exchange?
Well, first, Mr. Chair, Representative Marquardt, you know, maybe that wouldn't be a bad idea for the counties to have everything in their own section. But in reality, this is just basically the larger counties, and I think Ms. Larson has a response also.
Ms. Larson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. I think this is actually a benefit for the reviser as well. I think they want us to do this because it makes it easier to find laws when it's necessary. You referenced statutes a moment ago, and we are not seeking to codify every statute that might apply to Anoka County. What we're seeking to do is to take some very specific special laws that pertain only to Anoka County and place them in a chapter of the Minnesota statute so that our institutional memory will be enhanced. What I mean by that is we have department heads in the county who change. The same people are not in office for forever. People leave and people come and go, and we forget that these laws exist because currently they exist only in this big black ugly book, which is not a very modern way of keeping the laws, and we want to be able to find them easily. So I think this is primarily a benefit for the citizens of Anoka County, as have the citizens of Dakota County and Hennepin and Ramsey and St. Louis had, where when we need to see if there's a special law that pertains only to Anoka County, we know where to find it quickly. It's been a very time-consuming process just for me as a lawyer to find all of the special laws and find out what they are and how to locate them and They're all in some pretty dusty old books as it is right now.
Mm-hmm. Representative Cornish, no?
Yeah.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things that it also does is allow others who want to look at your special laws and repeal them have an easy place to find them. So are there any laws that you are putting in this section that may be potential targets for others who may want to repeal a program or two that you have a special law for?
Ms. Larson, or Representative Samuelson?
I'll defer to Ms. Larson. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. Certainly placing the laws into the statutes will make them easier to find for anyone in the state. So, for instance, if someone in another county wanted to look and see what does Anoka County have and can we get that, well, they certainly could do that. I don't know that it really makes them a target for repealer, though, because these are already laws on the books that pertain only to Anoka County, and I guess if there's someone else in the state who objects to them or finds something in there that's improper, sure, it's much more easily findable. But I think in the interest of having them easily findable by any member of the state, it's a good thing.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Just to follow up, for example, I have a section of TIF law that pertains to my area. And there are some people who just believe that TIF law is not appropriate. And so someone who doesn't like TIF law or particularly not like my provision, it's very, very easy to find them when you put them together. And that's all I wanted to make sure that you understand that as you're doing this, it also makes some of the things that you may have that others may not like an easier target.
Further questions? If not, Representative Samuelson, would you like to renew your motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I would like to remove the motion that House File 656 pass and be sent to the General Register.
Seeing no further question or discussion, all in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Representative Samuelson. And Ms. Larson, thank you.
He's back.
I didn't see you come back.
For the record, members, I saw Representative Samuelson nodding her head that motion was meant to be as amended. Isn't that correct, Representative Samuelson?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. If there's no objections, we'll go with that. What we had on the agenda next, members, was to continue a panel discussion. We anticipated more time than this. We're going to allow the cities and counties, or excuse me, cities and township representatives to come forward, and it's up to the members here if you'd like to ask them questions, but primarily we're asking them to come forward specifically, especially the townships, because they have a response document to present, and the cities can come forward if they can receive it as well. But as you recall, the cities did this very nice document that gave us a lot of examples of concerns with annexation, and I asked, I don't know, it was more than a month ago or so, for the townships to do a response document, and they have that ready to present. And for the members who aren't here, we'll see to it that they have it kept in their packet or actually deliver it to them. Welcome to the committee again on our favorite subject of annexation. Mr. Sulem and Ms. Burwell. Mr. Cooley?
Yes.
Mr. Sulem.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much.
State your name for the record, please.
Kent Sulem with the Minnesota Association of Townships. I believe staff is distributing what we attempted to do, and I'm sorry that we didn't have the time to. We were working on it on Monday and yesterday when we found out that we might have this opportunity today. So we kind of fast-track our printing, and we couldn't do an overlay with the city's document. But the way this handout is set up is meant to be able to put it side by side with the copy that I have of the city's document. Starts on page 5 where they have their slides that were printed. If you remember at the first hearing, Ms. Thurlow had a very nice slide presentation of the little scenarios that they felt justified the current annexation laws and the requested changes that they were putting forward. And Representative Olson asked us to try to do something that could create a side-by-side document so you can look at the city's version and have the city perspective and then the town perspective on the same annexation. And so that is what we attempted to do here, and we had hopes originally of being able to actually scan in and work from the city's documents that all be in one piece, but we did do it just page by page so you could set them side by side within that city file. If you would like, Mr. Chair, we can just simply start with the first one, which is the city of Marshall, and just try to quickly walk through our take on the annexation issues that the cities had raised.
Mr. Sulem, out of respect to the Ms. Thurlow, have you had a chance to review this at all?
No. Mr. Chair, no. This is okay. The first time I'm seeing the document.
Okay. It wasn't my intention to put anyone on the spot, and I understand that to be the case for you as well, Mr. Sulem. It's entirely up to the committee how much time you want to spend on this today. As I said, our time has been shortened from what we expected initially, but if there's no objections, and Mr. Sulem, you want to identify some things very briefly and just go through it very briefly, then the city will hear some clarifying points possibly, and the whole purpose here is to really facilitate an in-depth discussion on these various examples of problems, or alleged examples of problems of annexation, and we can learn any possible resolution that we might see fit and have to move on this year. So go ahead, Mr. Sulem.
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. And again, this literally, when I carried it into the hearing room, it was so hot from the copier, so that's why there hasn't been the opportunity to share it in advance. We rushed to try to finalize it when we were added to the agenda late yesterday. And so I fully anticipate that we'll need to have follow-up conversations and certainly, you know, allow Ms. Thurlow and Mr. Johnson and Ms. Larson an opportunity to ask us further questions. But just very quickly, with the Marshall situation, this is one that it's not clear to the township what annexation area this is particularly referring to. It's not one that our association has been contacted about. I don't believe Mr. Corey's firm is currently representing anybody in the Marshall area. And so all we could do is speculate based on what we were reading as to what some of the issues might be. And so that's what we're saying. We're not it wasn't clear to us exactly what the problem was that the cities were trying to portray with this scenario, other than there's an assumption that the city's economic plan, the city's development plan, should be automatically viewed as the proper one for the region. And it may very well be. I mean, I do not have the information of what Marshall's goals are for this tract of land, but our main point here is to flag. You have to be cautious about assuming just because the city council thinks it's good that the rest of the region agrees with that, because it's the townships that have to coordinate with the county to look at that broader planning and zoning efforts of the area. The second one, the Moorhead situation with the Americana Estates, we feel that this example is probably a nice little snapshot of the exact diversity of opinion between cities and townships on annexation, because we think this is an example of the type of thing that shows, hey, annexation doesn't have to be forced. Basically what happened was from my understanding of the situation as prescribed, is that the city of Moorhead, to use the city's word, acted as a good neighbor and did not annex the property and instead relied on the service fees and other connection fees to recoup the expense of the extension of municipal services that were needed to service an older development that had been allowed in the township. And from a township perspective, we think that's an option that should be explored. If the service and cost can be accounted for in other means, why go through the contested annexation process? And it's also an example of, as you can read, why it gets to be very difficult to try to say, well, now they're not paying for the other city services because it's not taking into account the big picture of things like LGA, the use of township resources back and forth, that we feel gets to be a very hard and very misleading situation to try to do this tit-for-tat situation of whose services are being paid for by what source.
Mr. Sulem, we have one question, but I want to, I'm trying to make sure we're really fair.
Mm-hmm.
I'm concerned about going in-depth on your presentation, and we're not having time today. I really intended for this just to be presented, and if members have questions, if you have some clarifying points you want to emphasize, stating what each one represents, but I really want the cities to have a chance to review this before we actually would have an overview on it, so that they could respond, because I think it's more effective for all of us to hear point and counterpoint at the same time, rather than end up with a presentation today and then next time the cities come back. I find it much more helpful to just hear everything at the same time. So if you really have clarifying points to add to this, that's what we're looking for. I'm not meaning, because we don't have time to go into it in depth.
I'm sorry, Mr. Dragis, I misunderstood what you were looking for. So, no, that's not a problem.
Before you go on, Representative Anderson, you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sulem, you mentioned in the Marshall brief here, it says, almost three quarters of the way down, it says, townships are required by law to coordinate all planning and zoning efforts with the county. And I'm wondering, does the city of Marshall have that same requirement with the county?
Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, no. Cities have complete autonomy for their planning and zoning outside of the metropolitan area. In the metro area, of course, you got to coordinate everything through the Met Council. The city of Marshall would have complete autonomy to their planning and zoning, where townships pursuant to Minnesota Statutes Chapter 394 are required to begin with the county. We have to be consistent with, we can be more restrictive than, but we cannot allow things that the county would prohibit. We cannot have inconsistent zoning designations from the county's zoning designation as far as permitted and allowable uses and that sort of thing, where the city has their own control. They are not accountable to any other regional view other than just local politics. There's no statutory requirement.
Thank you.
Ms. Thurl?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to make a clarifying point. Well, Mr. Sulem is technically correct that yes, cities do retain their own planning and zoning requirements, that many cities, including the city of Marshall, do have very cooperative agreements and relationships with their county. I know that the city of Marshall does work cooperatively and worked very cooperatively on the comprehensive plan that is now in place. And so they do have a dialogue down there.
President Lang.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Isn't it true that, I know it's true in my county and city, that our city planning has a county representative on it, as well as the county planning commission has a city representative on it? Isn't that typical of a lot of counties and cities around the state?
Mr. Sulem, Representative Lanning, I can't speak for every situation. I can only tell you, when I worked at the League of Minnesota Cities, I was unaware of any city that actually had a county designee on their planning commission. Certainly, we're not saying it doesn't occur. We're just saying there is no mandate, there is no requirement at the city level in the way there is at the township level. Our hope would be that everybody can be working together, and that's something we're trying to promote through our efforts on modifying. But I from my personal experience, I would say that as far as actually having a formal designee, my personal experience would say that that's an exception, not the rule, but I certainly don't have any statistics.
Well, I guess we're an exception then. We've had it for many years.
Ms. Thurlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been notified by the League of Minnesota Cities that they will do some checking to see how there are different arrangements in various communities, and they'll do some checking about the various arrangements between cities, counties, and townships on planning issues.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I realize that we're very short on time here, and having just got this, we don't all happen to have our side-by-sides with us. And so I really do think that it would be helpful if we had the ability to have some time to look at them both together, read them, and be able to ask educated questions, because, frankly, right now I don't feel in a position to do that.
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. I appreciate your support for my intent and maybe even clarifying it. All I wanted Mr. Sulem to do is add any clarifying points he sees fit. I maybe shouldn't have even invited that, because you're right. I have the other document with me because I kept it, and I really want to be fair, so we don't want to go into this in depth. Some of you may remember, however, the St. Cloud situation that I inquired about last time. And just for example, if I may, I've been perusing what the township has presented, and the St. Cloud situation was having to do with land use controls promoting smart growth. The city's presented a concern that the situation involves two counties, and in one jurisdiction they allowed a development in an air zone. And in the township, what they've presented, they identified that the development in air safety zones for airports, such as the one in St. Cloud, is regulated by both state and federal regulations. So what this means is the use in question is consistent with both state and federal standards. And what I was raising in my question is, it didn't seem to me that using this example to say that we should have annexation, maintaining current annexation law, that didn't seem to me that it would assure proper land use planning if the current land use regulations permitted what actually occurred. And what we should be doing is looking at making sure that we have a regulation so this can never happen, no matter whose jurisdiction it's in. And I thought that was, and I'm giving this as an example because this is what I'm looking for. I want to go through every one of these examples, listen to point and counterpoint, and figure out if it's truly an example that means we should change the law from what it is with regard to annexation, or if we should change the law with regard to zoning in general. And that's really the objective I feel that would be really important for us to consider, because in this particular case, I looked at this and I thought, you know, maybe we need to adjust the regulations regarding zoning, because I couldn't see anything that would assure it, whether it's in the jurisdiction of the county, the township, or the city, that would prevent someone from building in these areas. Unless we actually have regulations to prevent it, then it wouldn't matter whose jurisdiction it's in. And it seemed to me it should be an absolute that you don't build in these areas because of the problems that come years down the road. So that, to me, was an easy example to identify. If you forgive me for you not having that document in front of you. And I just present that as a way of trying to define the objective of what I think is important to us as a committee. And members, you can add to that or subtract from it. I'm not meaning to dictate, but that's the objective I feel would be important. That's why I wanted to try to facilitate this point and counterpoint discussion. But when it's broken, it's not near as effective. So, Mr. Sulem, if you have any clarifying points, great, you can state them, the things that you'd like to bring to our attention, but we really can't take an in-depth presentation at this time.
Mr. Chair, certainly. And I guess the only comment I will make is a correction, clarification on the last page, the Wyoming Township one.
we were trying to piece together information from multiple sources, and Mr. Corey and I were discussing prior to the start of the testimony here that the description at, towards the end is not completely an accurate description of the ALJ's order, and so we just want to make sure that the correct information is provided. What occurred there when we towards the end, there's a reference to the city that the ALJ did not grant a portion of the annexation because of the objections from the city of Wyoming. In fact, what occurred with that was when the city of Wyoming raised their objection, that is what led the city of Chisago to reduce the size of their petition. That was not the ALJ's order. That was the city of Wyoming's request to the city of Chisago resulted in the reducing of the size of the petition. The strip of land of the revised petition that was not annexed because the ALJ found that the cities had made insufficient arguments to justify the annexation. So I just want to clarify that point because it is not quite properly worded in that page.
Mr. Sulem, if you wanted to make changes to this soon and send it to us electronically, in fact, the way my eyesight's going these days, if you wanted to make the text larger, I wouldn't mind.
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to do that.
But are there any other questions from members? One final thing we need to I need to discuss with the members, and Mr. Sulem, it might be advantageous for you to send that to us electronically so we can email it to all the members of the committee.
I will do that.
And Ms. Thurlow, if you folks could even send yours electronically, we could do the same thing.
Actually, Mr. Chair, to that point, I'd like to say that the entire study, you have been handed the executive summary, the entire study, which is longer, it can be found on the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities website, which is www.greatermncities.org.
Thank you. Members, the number, in regards to our tour, a number of members have identified they can't go on the 4th, and we want to open up the 11th and see if more members can attend. So if you could ask your scheduler to send Mary Cummins an email. In fact, I think I'll ask her to send out an email requesting the information for the members who aren't here today. If we have greater attendance on the 11th, I've discussed this with the townships and the city organizations representatives, we'll move it to the 11th for convenience sake. I apologize for any inconvenience, but Mary does a good job, but it's not easy to plan these things. So I appreciate your flexibility in that, and we'll send out an email so your assistants get it and they can check your schedules with you, and we'll try to resolve this as soon as possible and get a notice out. Representative Hosh.
Mr. Chair, will the itinerary be the same as discussed on the 4th?
That's my understanding, yes. You'll still be able to go home when you're done.
Thank you for not holding me captive.
Any further discussion, members? Seeing none, I thank you all very much. Good job. And have a great afternoon. The meeting's adjourned.